I'm Tony Bruschi. Welcome. We hope you've enjoyed our coverage on the trial of Alec Murdaugh. This is a look back at some of the key moments and conversations that we've had over the last several weeks regarding the case.
This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening. Be sure to press subscribe if you haven't done so already so you don't miss any of our updates and discussions on the cases that we're following for you every day here at Hidden Killers and True Crime Today. Jim Rathman joining us, former Secret Service investigative consultant. Jim, I want to ask this as we go into a discussion about the Alec Murdaugh case. Some new video coming out just days ago. And the video I'm speaking of, there's been a lot. What I'm speaking of specifically is the body cam footage of the officers arriving at the scene of his compound the night of the murders. It's literally them opening up the doors, turning on the flashlights, walking out, and there's Alec Murdaugh in a stark white t-shirt smelling downy fresh. I don't know if it's downy or what he was using, but it sure looked downy fresh. And he's, oh my gosh, I just went in there and I saw them and I checked for a pulse, you know, and they're like, what's going on, sir? Just kind of calm down. Well, it's a long story. Immediately, within minutes, he's giving the motive and he's telling people what happened or what he'd like them to believe happened. He immediately goes into, oh, there's this boat crash and, you know, they've been getting these threats and we didn't really think anything of it, but I don't, and then like, okay, well tell us more, but he's immediately trying to lead the authorities in that direction within seconds. It was shameless and it was rather shocking if you just saw your son's head and brain scattered across the room and you're already kind of chatting about that. It seemed, I don't know, a little staged. Thoughts?
It's incredibly odd. A lot of times, especially with a crime like that, and you're back at the scene, the police are there. Whatever thing you say is going to be recorded. He knows that. People are nervous, but you know, you have excited utterances and other things that they just will just come out and say, and you got to sit back and scratch your head and go, "Why on earth did you just say that? It makes no sense at all." For me, it seems like he's trying to steer the direction. He's trying to help use his position of being an attorney, having all of his family members as being the DAs within that county for years. I mean, I think they were in charge for 80 something years, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So he's trying to use that position of authority. And it's like, you know, he thinks he's the smartest person in the room. So I'm going to tell the detectives right away what this has to be, because this is what it has to be. And he wants them to throw them off the trail as much as possible. But, you know, you take that, what he was doing, and also what you've seen from the video from what, a week ago or yeah. 2 weeks ago, where he was sitting inside the detective vehicle and he's asking questions. You know, the answers that he's giving, he doesn't seem to be terribly distraught. There's a moment where he gets a phone call where he is, but the whole entire situation makes no sense to me. And not to mention, you know, you're going to go and check the pulses. I mean, my goodness, did you hear the forensics expert talking about what the autopsies look like?
Yeah. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
There is no way you're going to walk up to check the pulse, you know, move them, see if there's any type of signs of life, and not have some sort of blood on you, brain matter, you know, whatever the case might be, whether it's on his shoes, because he's going to have to walk through a puddle of blood. That sounds like a pretty gruesome scene. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how he was able to do that, and you don't have a single drop or I shouldn't say, you don't have any type of evidence on you at that particular time. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I'm wondering how much he sat there and kind of pre-planned how he's going to act after this, because it's interesting how he went to that, where it must be from the boat accident. The choice of shirt that he had after this, he picked the whitest shirt he could. And people even say it smelled of being freshly laundered.
Well, at least. And the reason for that, Tony, is to go ahead and say, hey, obviously he knows what the blood spatter would have been like and the kickback and the contact wounds and all of that would have been like with the gunshots, allegedly, if he's the one who actually did it, right? So why not pick out the whitest shirt? So therefore there's nothing on it. You're like, look at me. I'm not a suspect here.
Right? I get that, but it's almost like it almost screams, this is too obvious that you're hiding something.
For sure.
It's like you went a bit too far that you're cheating at this. It's like looking at the Nintendo game, like you got the Game Genie on there. This is not just your thing. Like this is, there's no way you are completely cheating on this.
100%.
It's just bizarre. I know today, I haven't seen the testimony, but I believe there's been some testimony coming out today about the hose that was attached to the kennels. And the groundskeeper, whoever they were that were helping around there, testifying that the way the hose was hung back up was not where it normally would be. It was not hung in the same proper way that he would normally hang it. And he's saying someone clearly had used this after I had hung it up, which would make sense if you're trying to, you know, rinse off all the blood.
Correct. Exactly. And then, you know, where he's got a lot of problems within his story. You know, being caught on that Snapchat video most certainly isn't going to help him because you got multiple people saying, nope, that's your voice. He had no idea that that was there. In addition to it, you know, when he went over to the other residence, I think it was his mother's residence, that when they ask, you tell them that I was here for 40 minutes.
Yep.
When in reality, he was only there for 20 minutes. One of the firearms used in this crime is still missing. And you know, one of the biggest pieces of all, what doesn't make sense either is, look, nobody's going to come. Like, I'm not going to go break into someone's house and know exactly where their firearms are and then use their firearms against them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to come in there armed already because I'm going to suspect that the people behind that house are armed. So I need to be armed too. So to me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. There's also more on the shirt too, with the housekeeper saying where he pretty much implies to her, no, this is the shirt I wore, even though she knew it was a different shirt, and she testified to that in court as correct. Well. Another thing that I'd seen in a more recent interrogation video, and this is the one that just came out yesterday, it's about an hour in length, and he goes from, you know, being very sad, upset, hysterical, to in the next breath, hey, you know, buddy bum bump over there, or whatever the name of somebody is. They have really interesting names there. He rented the house from me. He was a sheriff's deputy and really trying to be chummy with the officers that are in there, saying, oh, he was a really good officer. He was a really good boy and he's a great officer too. It's bizarre. It's spooky. Is it him trying to relate to them to go like, I'm kind of one of you guys?
It's a distraction technique. And again, another position of power. Now I can tell you in cases I've worked, I've had people do that kind of stuff to me. We used to have the department I worked at, our sheriff actually was in a sheriff's band. And so they had this one guy one time, he committed a really terrible crime against his wife. And that's what he was trying to do to distract me. Like, hey, I used to listen to your sheriff when you played in the sheriff's band. And he's trying to act like one of the good old boys. Like, I'm one of you.
Yeah.
Right. So don't look at me. Let me throw some stuff out there, letting you know who I know. You know, I'm friends with this person, I'm friends with that person, and it's completely a distraction. That's all it is just try to win them on your side, try to make your story as believable as possible, and just hope that you are doing a good enough job to turn that investigation into the direction you want it to go instead of the real path that it needs to go down. And that's all he's trying to do there. I mean, look, if I pulled up and I had my family members completely, you know, heads essentially blown off, I mean, I'm going to be so unbelievably distraught. I don't know if you can get any words out of me.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be like, yeah, you Bobby Bumblefuck. We were good friends. Good boy. Used to rent the house from me. Oh, my wife is dead. Hey, how's Shirley Bumblefuck doing? You know, it's like, what the heck are you talking about?
The last thing on earth I care about is any type of friendships, personal connections with people outside of my immediate family, because I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to live again. That's kind of how it would feel. You know, you can't breathe. You're, you know, just completely heartbroken and devastated. So it's definitely not the normal reaction. And again, I think that's something that's not going to play well in his favor. Plus, you know, his character anyway, with all the fraud stuff and you know, there's so much. This case is, a lot of times sit there and say, is there one that could be any more wild than this? And I'm sure one day there will be, but this one is pretty, Interesting. The amount of twists and turns.
Yeah, the amount of the lack of emotion that this man and the way that he can turn on a dime is truly amazing. Mm-hmm. And if this is how he represented clients in court, he wasn't that good of an attorney because he can barely represent himself in any sort of believable way in this sort of situation. Murdaugh, completely. He's expected to testify next week. Thoughts on that? Isn't that usually kind of a last ditch effort? You usually don't want your defendant on the stand.
Usually you don't. You know, I think in this situation with him being an attorney, maybe his attorneys are hoping that he'll do a good enough job representing himself, you know, because he's going to try to paint a different picture than what's out there and try to give his explanations again. Same thing he was trying to do to the detectives, mm-hmm. same thing he was doing to the officer that showed up, but who he knows. It's going to be almost the same tactics that now he's trying to do it on the jury members, you know, feel bad for me. But if I was one of the jury members, it'd be extremely hard to convince me that you didn't do this at this point.
Without a doubt. I think it would be almost at this point when he goes on the stand to hear what he says, difficult not to laugh almost at whatever right. show he's going to be putting on.
It's definitely going to be theatrical.
Jim Rathman, former Secret Service investigative consultant, thank you so much for your insight. Always a pleasure to talk with you. And you guys, thank you for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we're following for you right here. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. My name is Tony Bruschi. From all of us here, thanks for listening.